Hello and welcome to The Cynic Weekly. I'm your host, as ever, Louis McCaffrey, and I'm joined by Christopher Somani.
Yes, you are, Louis. How are you?
I'm good. I've missed you all, to be honest with you. It feels like I've not done a pod in ages. I mean, it was only last week, but it seems like it's been a while. You feeling okay?
I get by. Wee bit of news today, obviously, about things starting to open up, so a bit of positivity, not to rub it into one of our guests tonight, who doesn't live in Scotland at the moment. But yeah, it's a wee bit of a bright spot for us, you know. So take what we can get, Louis, just now. A shit show of a season and a shit show of a pandemic, but green shoots are recovering.
That's it. The good times are coming again. That man that you spoke about there was Callum Gordon. Callum, where are you and what's the situation? How are you?
How are you doing? Thanks for having me. Yeah, currently in Berlin, where they've got they're now entering their third wave of COVID, despite still being in their second lockdown, and they've made an absolute arse of their vaccine rollout as well. So, not great, but good to hear that there's some good news from back home.
I've not really kept up with it everywhere. Obviously, I know there's big kind of differences, but has it been the rollout and how they've done it, or is it the amount of vaccine that they've actually got?
Both. The absolute myth of German efficiency is ridiculous. It's a nation where people still use fax machines all the time, and yet somehow they've blagged this idea that they're incredibly efficient. So yeah, they've been incredibly slow with pretty much everything so far.
Well, let's hope it gets better quickly. And we're also joined by, last but not least, it's Aaron Connolly.
Hi man, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm good to see you sporting a wee bit of Adidas clobber that we were all very excited about not so long ago.
Yeah, I know. It's nice to wear it and not feel completely like it's completely tainted, although it is, but I feel slightly less pessimistic now than I did a few weeks ago. So I've started wearing the Adidas stuff again, and it's real. It's no DHgate like my usual. So, but as Savani says, you know, some green shoots of recovery in the country, some positive news today. So, busy day for me. We're getting time to tackle back up and running big. So, we've been in the planning stage all day, trying to get dates in place and that.
Excellent. Well, I'm sure everybody will be able to see that. It'll be tweeted out and things. That's probably all the positivity out of the way, because we're back to talking about Celtic, lads. So, Manny, I'm going to start with you. Obviously, we didn't have a game at the weekend there. We've had a bit of time off, you know, 2 weeks between, kind of 2 full weeks between games. After having a wee bit of time to reflect on it, how are you feeling about things?
I still just want the season to be done, but I'm kind of over it. I say I'm over it now. It's all it'll take is another set of pyrotechnics from that mob in the local area, and I'll probably be raging again. But I mean, as I just want the season done now, you know. Normally you would be thinking about the game, and I'm sure obviously we're going to come and talk about it, and I'd be thinking I want to beat them to put down a marker for next season. The Scottish Cup's still there, I want to win that. I really don't. I just want this to be done. I just want us to have a new manager and to sign new players and start the season again. This is almost just like, it's not even twisting the knife, it's just that there's just an emptiness when you think about it. The fact that we're playing them on Sunday and I couldn't give a shit sums up where we are in terms of as a club just now. But that, you know, we've talked about it before, it was almost a death by a thousand cuts. Then you got the triumphalism of when they actually confirmed it. That dissipated pretty quickly, and now I'm just kind of trundling along. And as I said, I'm just looking forward to next season now and going through the motions with everything.
Yeah, I'm kind of, it's funny, I've been trying my best to watch as much other football as I can just to get a kind of football fix, and you know, and it's funny, I'm like, the more I watch games like English games or the Champions League games or whatever, the more I really just want to watch my team. And then, you know, you think, God, this should be, you know, one of the biggest games of the season this weekend, and we should all be buzzing for it all week, and it's not. And there's part of me, to be honest with you, that's kind of dreading it. But without going too specifically on the game of the weekend, I think I'm kind of over the fact that they've won it, but I'm not over the fact that we've lost it. if that makes sense, like losing the 10 and all that sort of thing. I think that's going to take a long time to get over. I think because the celebrations have kind of died down now, I'm kind of past it, although there is the fear that it might kick up again at the weekend if we don't do our job right. But it's just a weird one because you don't know if you're really going to see much in the way of progress. You know, you don't know if you're really going to have a lot to shout about or if this is just going to... You know, it could kind of go either way. The team could be liberated by the fact that there's no pressure on them anymore and things are pretty much done. Or it could be the opposite and the kind of death by a thousand cuts will continue. Where do you stand in things, Callum? How are you feeling about going into the rest of these games?
I mean, at the start of this, well, yesterday when I was thinking about it, I genuinely didn't care. Today, because I knew I was coming on this and was starting to give it a bit more thought, you do just naturally get yourself a little bit worked up by thinking about them. And so now I think by the time the weekend rolls round, I'll be right up for it. But my interest in the rest of the season pretty much hinges on that 90 minutes, because for the two games that we've seen under Kennedy so far, there's probably what you could describe as green shoots. I mean, I thought we were okay against Aberdeen and you know, there was little elements that looked promising. I thought for 60 minutes against Dundee United, we were actually pretty good. You know, probably one of our best performances of the season domestically. And then it obviously all fell apart and it looked like our legs had gone and everything, and you were brought back down to reality very, very quickly. And that feels very much like the story of our season. So if we can go out on Sunday and get a win, I think there's a potential to then, you know, look at the rest of the season and the Scottish Cup and really go try put a marker down. But if we shit the bed like we have done on so many occasions this season, I'll probably be fully checked out until a new manager's announced, to be honest.
It's the mentality of the squad there, isn't it? That's the big thing that I'm worried about, because as Callum says, you know, they could just shit the bed and crumble, especially if there's the slightest bit of pressure or if they score. But it's a tough one to gauge where we're going to go from here for the rest of the season, especially under Kennedy.
I think a lot of people would have said Kennedy's addition was over, and that may well be true, and he'll be in the conversation, but he's probably not someone I would want to take the job going forward. But this is still a massive game for him personally. If he has any aspirations of getting a job beyond Celtic, or even the Celtic job might still be in his mind, I think it's a huge game for him. In terms of how I feel about it personally, yesterday I started my day similar to you, Louis. I was watching Young Boys against St Gallen in the Swiss League, but I finished it last night playing Football Manager with Eric Oak live at the Brazen Head on. So get fucking into them. At the end of the day, this is Rangers at the weekend. I don't care how the season's panned out over the course. For 90 minutes on Sunday, we need to go out and put a marker down. It's not a marker for next season, it's not a marker for anything else. It's that we don't let them come and turn us over again. It's happened far too often recently.
Yeah, and we'll come kind of specifically to the game later on, but I think in general it's, you know, reflecting on it, thinking back in this kind of season overall, and it's just the relative ease that they've had and everything. Like, they've really not been tested at any point, and you would hope that, you know, we've got a couple of games to show where we've got, you know, something about us, you know, and that kind of, it would be, I suppose in a way, it'd be nice to see some of the players who have served as well over the past few years to kind of go out on, not a high by any means, but, you know, get a bit of pride back in the remaining games, but we'll see what happens. Obviously, there's been a lot of speculation about the manager, who the manager will be, director of football and all that sort of thing. And we'll get to some of the more kind of silly names in a wee minute, but Callum, there's a lot of speculation about Fergal Harkin or Fergal Sharkey, if you listen to this podcast, and him possibly bringing in a team of analysts and things like that from Man City. It all sounds a bit too good to be true, doesn't it?
Yeah, but you're hoping that we are showing a level of ambition that we haven't shown, really, not since we brought in maybe Brendan Rodgers. I'm excited by by the idea of that, I think it also represents a huge risk. As anything, as you know, whoever we bring in is going to be a risk, but that certainly is such a departure from what we've been used to. And Fergal Harkin, his CV looks decent. We don't really know a whole lot about the guy, but it's also, you know, a director of football is a role he's not actually operated in before, and he might have all the tools and the CV that, you know, shows that he could probably do a good job in it, but you know, it can often be very different when you're actually placed in that role and told to go make it happen. I just hope that if that is what we're going to do, we really commit to it and we really go for it and we don't half-arse it. You know, I think back to when we brought in Ronnie Dyler, who progressive young coach with good ideas, and then gave him a load of loan players to work with and expected them to work magic. And, you know, I think we'll all admit Ronnie Dyler probably wasn't up to it. But at the same time, it was another example of us doing things a little bit on the cheap and not fully committing to a project, probably because we're a bit scared of being out of our depth or you know, I'm not quite sure. So I think if that is what the plan is and that's what Dominic Mackay wants to do, I really want to see us fully go for it. No, you know, sort of in-between measures. If we're going to go and lift half of Man City's analysts and backroom staff, go do it and do it properly.
Yeah, that's, I mean, so Manny, I don't know what you think. I'm a wee bit cynical, I think, just because of, you know, the pod we are. It's like this idea that you just go and take people from Man City and it's just going to work. I don't want us to fall into some kind of trap there, especially when, you know, is it Desmond's son or Lowell's son works at Man City and you're like, you know, are we really putting a lot of thought into it? Are we taking an easy option that might be just dangled in front of us?
I know what you mean, but I'm thinking the opposite, because I think Alan's hit the nail on the head and a few other folk have said that the idea of Dyla was fine if we had implemented it properly, but we didn't. We did it exactly that way. It was, he's an up-and-coming coach. He's worked wonders with a provincial club in Norway. Surely that's all he needs to come in and we'll do this. I mean, even though he'd been considered as an assistant to other candidates, they then went for Dyla, but then you never really built anything around him. Now, that's not to say that it would have worked, because well, we've seen what's happened since then and, you know, and what happened when he was there. But this, to me, what's been mooted in... We're hearing about this in the press that the club have been leaking to for most of the season. So there seems to be some sort of kind of, you know, it seems to be a genuine link as opposed to just paper talk. So I know what you mean, just plucking, because Man City are a big club at the top of the European football and in the English Premier League, just taking people from them will work. But there's part of me thinks that we are trying to do things different, maybe to do that kind of system that we've always talked about for a number of years, with the director of football, an up-and-coming coach. Part of that excites me. The talk about the manager actually excites me more just now than the game on Sunday. I think that's part of the reason why I don't really give a shit about Sunday. It's because it's Kennedy. See if we had got another coach in, see if Maresca and Harkin or whatever the hell we end up doing were in place, or even if they were announced when they were coming in, I think I would care more about Sunday. I'm just kind of patiently waiting on some more news about it in terms of what's going to happen. And I'll be honest, normally I'm as cynical as you, Louis, but I'm quite excited about the potential setup that's being mooted, as opposed to just going for, you know, one of the old guard, somebody that's a Celtic kind of link or whatever. For instance, if Roy Keane gets a job, I'll not be happy, put it that way.
No, I don't think anybody would be. It seems...
No, what you mean, it seems as if it's kind of...
It's just too good to be true. It's like that. I mean, if we could all fucking write it, if we could all have our pick, we'd have this amazing modern setup coming from Man City, and it seems like that's possibly the road we're going down. I was reading a couple of things. There was a good article in The Athletic last week, and I'm not going to butcher the guy's name. His first name's Sven, and that's good enough for me. He's the sporting director at Stuttgart, and there was an interview with him. He was previously at Arsenal, and I think he was head of recruitment at Arsenal, and he he got the chance to go to Stuttgart. I think Stuttgart had went down. I think they'd been relegated when he took over. But it was really interesting insight into the kind of sporting director of football. I'm not sure what the major differences between those two roles are exactly, but it kind of seems like the type of guy that maybe Fergal Harkin would be. But you know, the influence he had in the club and hiring a coach who wasn't a big name. I mean, there was a couple of good lines in it, but one of them was like, you know, you're not going to find, I didn't think I was going to find the great coach that I wanted through just the usual names, you know, and that rings true with the likes of Roy Keane, for example. I mean, none of us surely want Roy Keane anywhere near something like this. Enzo Maresca, I have no clue about the man as a manager, but he sounds a lot better than Roy Keane. And that's good enough for me. Aaron, where are you in terms of, you know, are you cynical or are you starting to believe?
I think I'm cynical about everything the club do right now. And I think that's probably well-founded to be cynical about it, looking at some of the decisions that have been made in the past. I still have this inkling that, you know, it's the guys who are making decisions remain the same. I know we've outsourced to a recruitment company to get someone in. But then, you know, I'm trying to focus on the positive, a bit like Samani. I want to look into next season and try and focus on what might be good about it. And looking at it right now, you know, we've got our honorary Irishman apparently coming in, Fergal Harkin, so we get to tick that box. And what could be an exciting young coach in Maresca, so we get to tick that box as well. So hopefully they go down this route or a route similar to this. But I think the key, and a lot of people have said it, and I'll reiterate it, is that the director of football and what his actual role is, that's the key. It's not bringing in someone with that title, but, you know, still having someone else above them involved in transfers and things like that, actually letting someone come in and revamp the full football operation. And that goes for first team to academy to everything, and potentially coach teams, which I know has been rounded in the press today. So I think it's about what that actual job spec is and how much ownership the person has of that, as opposed to just giving them a title.
Yeah, I'd love to know what the catalyst for this is. Like, is it just simple, you know, is it as simple as Lowell's leaving and this is what the new CEO wants? Or has this always been the plan, like behind the scenes? You know, have this journey to 10 in a row and then make the change after that. I mean, it just seems, obviously we're always kind of left in the dark, but I don't know what anybody's kind of gut feeling might be on it, but it does seem to be like, you know, they're kind of doing all the things that we want them to do right now, which is a bit weird.
Well, they did say there would be big changes after the 10 season. It's just as a support, we assume that would be after winning the 10. So there is part of me thinks that they were going to look to change things, but that might just be wishful thinking. Because say we had won it this season, are they likely to have sacked Lennon? Probably not. Or maybe, do you know, there's an assumption that some people have said that he might have walked because it would be the best time to walk and a lot of players would go and all that sort of stuff. I'm not so sure. So I don't know, but I'm pleased that it looks as if that's the direction we're going in rather than just reverting to type. But
do you think we'll see a manager? Do you think we'll see a manager before the end of the season? Or is that risky because you expose them to this campaign?
An announcement, I think we'll see. I don't think we'll see somebody in. And I think that's fine as long as they're doing stuff in the background. So, see if Kennedy's in charge for the end of the season, but let's just pretend it's Maresca. Very easy. Maresca's coming in on June the 1st. I've no issue with that as long as Maresca's talking to Fergal Harkin or Dominic Mackay or whoever about who he wants to sign, what he wants to do, how he wants to play. If Kennedy then just holds the reins until the end of the season, so be it. There's not really anything to play for anyway.
Anybody see it different? I mean, I don't know what to think about it. But I don't know if it's a club decision or the new manager's decision that they just don't want nothing to do with it. But we could have a while yet with the Scottish Cup and things like that. I feel as if we've also got the whole thing about season ticket sales. I mean, surely they're going to have to. They're going to have to bring out some news, whether it's the director of football or the manager at some point.
I think if there wasn't going to be such a huge turnover of players in the summer, there would be a much stronger argument for bringing in a manager now. And, you know, he can assess what he's got, begin working with players, and sort of begin building to the future. But whoever's going to come in is almost going to have to build a squad from scratch. You know, the amount of players that we're going to be losing, there's no point in bringing him in and getting him to work with Odson Edward and Christopher Ayer only to have to then replace him in a couple of months' time. So it's not ideal, and especially as a fan, I think you feel like you're in limbo a little bit right now. But you need to hope that behind the scenes, you know, things are genuinely going on and they're genuinely planning for it properly, whether it's bringing in this director of football model or, you know, scouting potential replacements for the 6, 7, 8 players that we're going to need to replace in the summer. So until we have a clear plan, I don't think there's any, and that's communicated to the supporters, which I think is really, really important, particularly in terms of rebuilding a bit of trust. But until those things happen, I don't think there's any, you know, I think John Kennedy's a relatively safe pair of hands until the end of the season. We'll finish second and hopefully we can make a decent fist of the Scottish Cup. But I mean, nothing much else can really happen between now and then.
Just as you're getting like confident and cocky about it, thinking Celtic are going to, you know, bring out this new system and everything and actually modernise, that we start getting linked to Roy Keane. And that gives me the absolute crippling fear that, you know, a man who's knocked his back before when he's been offered the job, Celtic man and all that sort of thing, is going to be the big name that's going to be dangled in front of some of the kind of old guard, and they might go that way. Does anybody get any kind of worries about possibly us not doing this, or maybe doing it a kind of half-arsed and having a director of football but having, you know, some shite manager like Roy Keane come in?
I think it's I think I've got genuine worries about it. There's a lot of chat about having a safe pair of hands to oversee all the change, to allow everything else to fall into place, and maybe putting a manager on a rolling contract, be that Roy Keane, Steve Clarke probably falls into that bracket. Like names like that, it gives me the absolute fucking fear as well. But then Enzo Maresca gives me a bit of the fear, because you don't know what you're getting, really. It just sounds a bit nicer, like you said, Louis. The name sounds great. He comes from Man City. You know, he's worked at Sevilla. He's worked with Pellegrini at West Ham. So it sounds a lot better than Roy Keane, who made an arse of it at Sunderland in the Premier League and then made even more of an arse of it at Ipswich. So both give me the fear. However, you can get behind Maresca. I can't get behind Roy Keane being Celtic manager, to be honest. I obviously would, because I'm a Celtic fan, but he feels like he's stuck in the dark ages. And I know he plays a bit of a caricature and it's a bit of an act on Sky and stuff like that, and it's all about, you know, being relevant for him as a pundit, but some of the things he comes away with are just ridiculous in the modern day game.
We can't pull a rat type managerial signing. We just can't do it. You know, that pool which we swim in, top class Irish managers. We've used them now. We got a Neil back then, took Rodgers, and it's done. So we can't rely on the Celtic connection to sign somebody who would ordinarily be above our kind of pay grade, if you will, sort of thing. So we've got two options. We have got your Roy Keane types who, no thank you, or you need to take a different direction when it comes to Maresca. But Aaron's right. It's basically, they both can give you a bit of the fear. But if you sat me down and basically said to me, which of these two types of manager would you want? What model would you want? I wouldn't even hesitate in picking an up-and-coming coach with a different structure than somebody like Roy Keane. But there's a lot of people out there that would like Roy Keane.
That's what I was going to say, Somani. There's probably a lot of people that would be, they want the big name.
You know, it's Keane specifically, right? And this is an old-school mentality, right? Well, they'll talk about players like Barkas and, you know, you could probably name a few others. They'd shite themselves if Keane came in, right? You know what? Keane would come in and they would probably, you know, Keane would have been an ideal candidate to bring in October, because he probably would have barked at them that much that you would have got a small reaction out of them. But that doesn't last long. That lasts for a few months. And the idea that you're going to change or revolutionise a club by shouting more at players, you know, is archaic in its thought. But I'm sure there are some people out there that think that's all that's needed. Make these players scared and they'll perform better. And that's just such a kind of shite viewpoint, if you ask me.
I reckon that the people that think that and the people that also didn't want Neil Lennon sacked as a Venn diagram is a perfect circle. It's the exact same type of fan.
I just want to politely ask you if you all stop attacking my dad, please. My dad's went from Jack Ross has been his like hip appointment to Jack Ross's man, and then he's fallen off a cliff a wee bit of hip, so he's fully in the Roy Keane camp now. It's some terrible, terrible conversations are being had right now.
Fuck yes, that happened, by the way. With him sorted right out.
Well, I do know that the thought did cross my mind that he might have been, as you kind of said there, Samani, he might have been somebody to come in rather than bloody John Kennedy and just give him a bit of shit for how shite they've been this season. I would have liked to have seen a few rockets up arses, but anyway. Aaron, news the kind of in the past week about Scott Brown's future, so possibly linked or you know, talking about a player coaching role at Aberdeen, if Stephen Glass gets the job who he's pals with as manager. Do you think that would be kind of best for all parties? Because obviously Brown, he wants to go into coaching, but he wants to continue his playing career. And we have all, I think we're all kind of unanimous that his time's up as a starter at Celtic. Or are you maybe in the school of thought, as I know some people genuinely are, that if we've got so much change happening in other areas that we need to keep some stability that maybe Brown could offer?
I understand the stability argument. I think that's probably right for a few players, but it's right for players who can contribute, and I'm not sure Scott Brown can. I know he's been slightly better in the last two games before people start shouting that, you know, he's been slightly better. But over the course of this season, Scott Brown's performances have been way, way below standard, way, way below par. And that's probably right about most of the squad. But he's been, in particular, he's been really disappointing. He's getting older. His legs are going to be another bit on. It's another pre-season under his belt. I just don't see it, him taking up a wage as a player at Celtic next season. I don't think he needs to be there. I don't think he should be there. By all means, if you want to keep him at the club, give him the under-18s, whether that be as an assistant coach to someone, let him go learn his coaching from there. Does it make sense, Scott Brown, to go to Aberdeen either as a player assistant manager or something? I'm not so sure it does. I feel like that job's a bit of a poison chalice right now as well. Not a particularly good squad. They're historically not a club who really want to push beyond their limits. There's other clubs who will come and challenge them. I think they're probably on a downward trajectory. It might be quite difficult to turn around at this point, so I'm not sure that that's the right move for him either. But he shouldn't be at Celtic next season, not in a playing capacity anyway, and probably not even working with the first team squad as a coach. I've heard that being muted, and I think that's unfair. You look at boys like McManus, O'Day, who've sort of went away, done their education, and then came back and worked at low, like 18s and reserves at Celtic. It would be a smack in the face to that sort of development and pathway to then say, oh, we'll bring Scott Brown in as a coach, but you know, he was here 10 years, so he gets to jump ahead of you boys in the waiting line to the first team.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. You know, I really don't. I think we have to have a kind of clean break. I get the idea that, you know, you keep him as a kind of figurehead, a bit like kind of maybe Tom Boyd, and that sort of, he's a leader, but he's off the park and that sort of thing. I just can't see it. I mean, I think I still hold him culpable for a lot of things, and I know that's probably unfair to a degree. You know, of course he's going to want to play, but and can you really expect him to turn around and say, no, don't play me? But I think he comes with, you know, I still go back to that when Lennon came back and it was the big, you know, the video behind the scenes and the two of them embracing each other like, you know, two lads in a pub, and it was just, it just stinks to me. And I think if we are going to modernise and we're going to kind of, I don't know, really reinvent ourselves, I suppose, then we need to get away from the heroes of yesterday and kind of, you know, crack on. Somebody, you just end up there.
There's two things about Brown. One, I think he is tainted by the Lennon regime and his perceived closeness. Two, I've no issue with him staying on a very limited playing capacity for that continuity. My problem is the trust in the club in terms of not playing him. If you said to me, Brown would stay, but he would play a very limited role, and it was for that stability. I'd probably say okay, obviously on a reduced wage as well, because he's on far, far too much money for what he gives to the side. But I wouldn't have any faith in that being, I wouldn't have any trust in the club not pushing for him to play football, and that's my problem. So I would probably choose to cut ties with him as well. Although the idea of him continuing over for a season or so, for that reason, I can see the idea behind it. This might just be the appropriate time for him to go. And that's that, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Callum, I don't know what your thoughts are, but I mean, would somebody like Enzo Maresca, you know, would he embrace that in terms of someone who's been so influential at the club and a kind of elder statesman of the club and having him on side? Or do you think he would, I mean, would he try and kind of do what they're at done and try and reinvent him and, you know, stimulate his playing career again? It's kind of hard to judge, or would they maybe just prefer not to have to deal with him?
I think for a young coach like Maresca coming in, into his first job like that, having somebody like Scott Brown, who's respected, you know, throughout the club and by, you know, a lot of the youth players look up to him and so on, having him sort of give his blessing could be really beneficial for a young coach coming in like Maresca. But we've also seen the opposite side of that when, you know, I don't think Scott Brown initially, along with a few other senior players, quite fancied Ronnie Dyla. I don't know why I keep speaking about Ronnie Dyla tonight, but there you go. And I think looking back, you know, we always thought that maybe Dyla wasn't good enough, or he probably wasn't good enough, but he certainly struggled to get his ideas about, you know, fitness and nutrition and 24-hour athletes and so on across to his players. And I think it's fair to surmise that Scott Brown was part of that, even if he wasn't a leading figure. So it's a huge risk for any manager coming in. But from a simple playing perspective, I don't think our squad can afford to carry three holding midfielders. I think it's clear that Soro will be there next season. I think, you know, if we keep Brown, do we then bring in a third? Because I look at Soro as a player with potential that can be worked with, but I don't look at Soro and think, you know, he's my starting holding midfielder next season when you go to Ibrox or you're playing in Champions League qualifiers or the Europa League. I don't think he's shown enough to say that that's his position, and I think it's an area where we could definitely strengthen. I think it's an area that we've been weak in all season, both with Brown and Soro in the side, and part of that's due to tactical deficiencies. But I think if you had a higher quality holding midfielder in there, things might look, you know, a good degree better. So I don't think we can afford to have three holding midfielders in that squad and give them all game time, to be honest.
Yeah, that's one thing that I've been thinking about with some of the games I've been watching recently. You know, watched Barcelona a couple of times, for example, and they've got quite a few kind of young players in the team now. But a lot of them have, a lot of the teams I've watched recently in the like Champions League and even, I suppose, English Premiership, they've got players who have clearly defined roles. Like, you know exactly what their job is. You know, it's their job, it's what they're good at, and they're put in a position to add that role to the team. I think you struggle with that with us. I think that's one of the things that's really became a problem for us, that we've got players who are just a bit beige. They do a wee bit of everything and not really excel in any certain role. Say, for example, Ryan Christie. Like, Ryan Christie, we don't know what his position, what his best position is, what his role is. We don't really know even maybe what David Turnbull's is, because we've moved him about a bit and we ask him to do one thing one week, the other thing next week. Like, I think we've just ended up with a squad of like players, but not really players that are good at doing certain jobs for the team and having a clearly defined kind of, obviously, structure to it. So, Manny, you were going to come in there.
We don't have an identity. And for a football club who have one of their most famous songs says to play football the Glasgow Celtic way, what is the Glasgow Celtic way right now? You know, we know what it is in our head. It's attacking football. You know, we built our worldwide reputation on breaking Catenaccio down in 1967. You know, I thought that we knew what our identity was, and that's what it was. We went out and we attacked. You know, even in the 90s, there we go. I always bring it back to the 90s. Even in the 90s, when we were getting beat off Rangers, we were really cavalier. Tommy Burnside swashbuckling and pipped by the more savvy Rangers team. Not only the more savvy, the richer Rangers team. But we don't even have that now. We've just got a group of players who go onto the park, and that's it. And that's the problem. We need to regain our identity. And I don't hear many people talking about that, because let's be honest, our identity's tradable when it comes to winning, because I think that's probably a bit more important in the minds of the support. But I still think it's important to say, I want Celtic to win, but I want them to win and it to be pleasing on the eye. But right now, there's just nothing. There is no identity. We can't say that we are that football club just now. We are just a team going through the motions.
Sorry, Aaron, go. Manny's
spot on about that. Like, we don't have an identity. We also don't recruit well at all. I think we're just going by good players. And while that's obviously part of recruitment, you know, you need to be bringing in good players, but we don't bring in players who fit a system, because we don't know a system. We don't know our identity. You know, we'll go 3-5-2 in the summer, we sign players who fit that, we identify that doesn't work, and we have to then try and change it. We're left with no wingers, we find ourselves doing a diamond that I don't think any of us fully believe in, or even that Kennedy might even fully believe in. I think the recruitment at the club over a long, long time now, might have been a few gems in there, but the recruitment's been a real issue, and that's because we don't have an identity. We haven't identified roles per position, or rough roles per position. Like, what is the type of fullback we want? I'm not sure that anyone at the club knows that, because you look at the fullbacks we bring in, they're all so different in so many different ways. Strikers are the same, and that's the same across the board. And it made me think, when Samani was talking, I was thinking of John Kennedy, recently done an interview, and they basically asked him about all the managers he'd worked under and what were they like. And he said Neil Lennon was a winner, and he found a way to win. And that's where we've lost it, mainly. Now, Dyla and Rodgers had very clear ways of playing, very clear values, a very clear, you know, path they wanted to take with their team. Lennon has very much just been, give me the best players, I'll find a way to try and make sure we win games. And it's been lost. All of the identity, everything that's been built up before, has been completely lost. So we're now left with a squad that probably doesn't really fit any particular system. All of the players are all, like you say, Christie, we don't know his best role. Even McGregor, even though we know he's a central midfielder player, how do we get the best out of Callum McGregor? Is he a 6? Is he an 8? Is he a 10? You know, Turnbull, very clearly for me, is a 10, but doesn't do enough defensively to play in midfield for us in the big games, because then, you know, he's basically a man down defensively, so we're then just having to leave him there. So there's so much that needs to be fixed, and I think the bottom line is you need to bring a manager in who says, look, this is the clear way that I want to play. This is the type of player I need per position, and he needs to work much closer with the recruitment team to get that in.
Callum, I'm maybe being a wee bit of a dick here, because I'm again going to go back to somebody like Barcelona or Arsenal. I mean, we see teams in Europe who have got maybe 4 or 5 youth players that have came through the ranks in their team, or players that they've bought at a young age, coming into their team and influencing things. Do you think we need to be a wee bit critical of our kind of youth academy and how many players it's producing? I know, okay, we might have one or two, like Kieran Tierney, for example, somebody who stands out, but he is one in, you know, one in a million, really. Do you think we should be having, especially considering we are, you know, the biggest, most well-resourced team in the country, we should really be getting to the point where we've got 3, 4, 5 players that can come in, and we need to give them a chance. We've seen players going to Germany, going to Bayern Munich, you know, a couple of youth players in the past year. These players should be coming in and doing something for us, shouldn't they?
Yeah, but I think it's all good, being a very, you know, promising young player at 17, 18, 19 years old. It's about how we get them to make that jump. And I don't think we've figured out a way to really bridge that gap as a club. You know, I know clubs were mooted today in the press, and, you know, that sounds quite promising, because it would allow these young players to play against proper men and you know, gain that side of the game while still playing in a, you know, a setup and a tactical system that's not too dissimilar to what would be expected of him in the first team. You know, we've all seen enough of Stephen Welsh this season to make, you know, a rough judgment on him. But I remember when he went out to Morton on loan last season, they were playing him at right back. And, you know, things like that make me really concerned about what are we actually doing for, to help, you know, help bridge that gap from the youth team to the first team. Because if you're just punting them out on loan and saying, away you go, enjoy yourself, it's not going to help their development. And then when they come back to Celtic, it's a really, really difficult jump for them to make. I don't think we use the loan system well at all. You know, you look at players like Karamoko Dembele and Cameron Harper, young, talented players who clearly needed to bulk up a bit and learn the game a little bit. And they've just been sort of languishing in our youth team. And then, as we saw, you know, in January, are flung in at the deep end and look, you know, miles off it. So we either need to push ahead with this cult team thing, and hopefully that can be our tool to bridge in the two, or we need to completely overhaul how we loan out players and be a lot more strategic with the type of clubs that we're placing, you know, these talented young players at. Because I think when you see the amount of players that are going to Man City and Bayern Munich picked up at 16, 17 years old, you know, even the likes of Aaron Hickey playing in Serie A, there's quality there. There must be quality there. But it's about how do we develop and nurture that to the point that they're able to pull on a Celtic jersey, because that's not necessarily the same as being able to turn out for Dundee or whatever.
Yeah, I think we're maybe doing it all right with Robertson. Robert, I think is he at Doncaster now, or was it Doncaster that he was at? I think he's at Doncaster now. And I know we recalled him, and everybody questioned what the fuck are we doing? We're recalling him, not playing. But I think there was clearly a plan there to get him to a different team, a team that played a more attractive way of playing, that was maybe more similar to what we believe that we should be playing, or you know, would be playing under a better manager. But let's hope that one pays off. But I think it's definitely a discussion to be had in this kind of close season, and talk about the role of the youth players and you know, where they feature in a kind of revamped outlook for the club. So Manny, get that rat in his guard of honour to fuck, am I right? Or how right am I?
I mean, there's two things, right? Guard of honour, they never done it for us. Conversation ends there. It's pure pish. So let's just not even give that any time of the day. That rat, he can't talk about class whatsoever. I mean, you'd alluded to it, Louis. I'm not sure it was the case, right? But people going a bit soft on him in terms of how what had happened with Lennon. I think we can say here that obviously Lennon was a major downgrade on the rat, because as much as he's a horrible stinking rat, he's a top class football coach, top class manager, and we can miss that. But to that pish about that was just a reminder how much of a snaky rat he is. And I don't even want to comment further on it. He should keep his nose out. He is nothing to me.
He's always got to make headlines before a big game, but he just loves it.
I'm Michael Corleone. He's Fredo. I've said my piece. I'm not saying that I'm going to like kill him in a boat or anything like that, as in The Godfather, but you know, he's nothing to me. I've told him that he's nothing to me. He shouldn't be talking about Celtic.
Aye. Guard of honour, like, I would be amazed if anybody had a hot take that contradicted that, what Samani's just said there. But it's a load of fucking shite. No way do I want to see Celtic players clapping that shit. Like, don't fucking do that. If you do that, imagine somebody clapped. Imagine. Who do you think would clap?
Rod Stewart.
He's probably got his old Rangers jersey that he can dig out as well. Yeah. Aye, it's a load of nonsense, but it's the nature of like having a 24 news hour a 24-hour news cycle now, especially with, you know, Sky Sports News and whatever, you always need to come up with something to talk about. And if there's nothing to talk about, you'll manufacture something to talk about and go off and ask various managers. You know, John Hughes getting asked about it as well, as if it matters at all. I didn't care when they didn't give us a guard honour 2 years ago. I wouldn't have liked it. I'd have felt uncomfortable by it. I don't like them and they don't like me, and that's absolutely fine. And all this like nonsense respectability element of it that's been brought in, and I think particularly pushed by the English media, where you get half and half scarce even for their fiercest derbies outside the ground, it's a load of nonsense. The only way I'd be up for a guard honour is if we can wheel out their coffin from 2012 and have a couple of lads with balaclavas and rifles firing shots into there. Unless that happens, I'm not interested.
Do you know what I hated about it most? He's always got a fucking shite story to tell us when he's talking about something. He goes on to talk about, oh, I remember when I was at Chelsea and we won the league and the Man United players clapped us, and that was Sir Alex showing his class. I'm like, fuck up, Brendan, you're under-12s manager. Get a grip of yourself.
I mean, how that man can talk about fucking being, you know, class when he walked out on his, you know, boyhood heroes halfway through a season. He's a fucking rat bastard. Listen, we've kind of delayed it enough, but we should probably get into the game. I'd actually like to talk a bit about football and kind of put them and who they are to one side and talk about probably, I suppose, them as a team and the football that they play. Aaron, I mean, I was going to ask you for your kind of game plan for the derby and how you would set up, and we'll probably get to us in a minute. But, I mean, you can't say that the Rangers aren't a good footballing side by, you know, if you especially judge what they've done in Europe this season and you know, the last couple of seasons. They've clearly got a way of getting results, especially in Europe. What do you think their strengths are in general, and what do we need to try and kind of nullify from our point of view?
This is hard. I hate talking about them. See, when I seen this in the rundown, I thought, don't actually ask me this, Louis. Let's talk about everything else for an hour and go over time.
I know.
I think we know they're hard to break down. They're very difficult to break down. They're excellent off the ball, out of possession. You know, they're really good. They own the space on the pitch really well. They make it really tough for you. They defend really narrow, force you into wide areas, don't let you play through them. All those things are true. And then, as much as I hate to admit it, they've got some players of quality, especially in the middle of the park. Look at Kamara. You know, in the last couple of games against us, he's an excellent football player. He's really good on the ball. Davis keeps them ticking in there. They've got some good players. They've got dangerous wide, not even wide players, attacking midfielders. For all Kent flatters to deceive, you know, he's caused us real problems. So, and then Hadji, again, is very similar, does flatter to deceive, but it's caused us problems. I quite like Aribo in terms of how long have I supported Rangers? Fuck me. what do we do? It's a hard one. I'd love to speak to John Kennedy about it, to be honest, and it'd be interesting to hear what he's going to say, because we keep on saying we don't believe in this diamond, and I don't think he does. I really don't. I don't think James Forrest is anywhere near ready to play. We've seen that United. It was miles off it when he came on. I couldn't believe. He's been out injured a long time, but I couldn't believe how poor he was. He looked like he hadn't seen a ball in months. Really struggled. So I think we're hamstrung, and I think we'll probably need to go diamond again. I think you might see something quite similar to what we've done at Ibrox in terms of performance, pressing them quite high. David Turnbull coming up and almost pressing them as a front three. It'll be interesting to see who plays in that three. He's obviously or in that front two initially. It'll be Edouard and somebody, of course. We've seen Klamala be used. We've seen El Yunusi. I thought El Yunusi was pretty poor, even though we were decent against United. I don't think he looked comfortable there, so it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Also, we've also got, you know, Kennedy's now had an extra, 9, 10, 11 days to work with the team. So let's see how that goes and if there's any more differences. We'll look to play out from the back. You know, we've seen that will continue. Hopefully, we're slowly getting more comfortable with that. And they'll sit off and let us do that, but we're going to have to find a way to break them down. David Turnbull will be massive. I don't think he's looked particularly good in the first two games. He's had a few flashes against Dundee United, but I think he's looked a wee bit uncomfortable taking the ball in the way when we are building out from the back and it's not getting to him quite as quick as it has or quite as directly. So I think he's obviously the player who can make things happen, who can unlock it a wee bit. So he's the big player for me this weekend and the one who may help us make a difference. But I think it'll be, we'll set up similar to the way we did at Ibrox. I think we'll go with the diamond. I'd be surprised if we didn't do otherwise.
Do you think there's, before I bring up Mane, I'm sorry, but do you think that because they're so kind of well-versed in the kind of 4-3-3 and the system that they play, they've done it for so long, does that make things, you know, is it very hard for us to win a one-off game against them when we're not as organised ourselves? Or because you know so much about them, can you kind of study them more and come up with a solution? And, you know, theoretically, I know it's a different thing to pull it off, but, you know, you're so familiar with them, and yet that might be the very thing that makes things harder, if you know what I mean.
I think it's worthwhile mentioning that their whole... This system they have and everything they're set up to do was to, number one, was to stop us. So they came in, Gerard and Beal came into the job, looked at us as their direct competition, and the team who were running away with it every season, too comfortable, and they had to find a way to beat us. Now they've had 3 years at it, and people forget that. They've had 3 years of working against us and coming up with, or 2 years until the start of this season, to come up with something that was going to put an end to our dominance. So their system is purely set up to combat what we've been doing for a number, or what we had been doing for a number of years. And it's worked for them in Europe as well, because similarly, they play against teams who have a lot of the ball and they sit in, frustrate. You know, like I say, they almost mark the space really well. They make it so difficult. They don't allow passing lanes. They force you into wide areas and then defend from there. So they've had 2 years at that, a cracking, coming up with something to beat us. We had a fucking lame duck manager for 18 months of that time who didn't do anything differently, other than coming up with a diamond formation that was forced upon him because we didn't have wide players realistically. And that shocked him a bit in January. You've seen that. It's the first time in a long time, in a numerous four games maybe, that we gave him any sort of real problems. Aye, we didn't create a lot of opportunities. I think at the time we overstated our dominance in that game, but we created them problems for the first time in a while. So that John Kennedy, hopefully, and I know he would have, along with some of the other backroom staff, would have sat down and probably watched that game, watched the other games, and they'll be looking for other little tweaks. And every system has its flaws, and theirs as well has its flaws. You know, if you pen their fullbacks back, really don't, that really has a problem with their attacking outlet and what they do. And we've seen that in January, because we went with a high three in a press and didn't let the fullbacks get it. Tavernier and Barisic were just forced to play the ball back to centre-halves all the time. If you do that, Goldson will give the ball away consistently. And we've seen that. You know how many times with him and Tavernier giving the ball away to us under a bit of pressure, we go and break and score. So there's obviously ways to do it. And I hope John Kennedy, or I know he would have done his homework, and hopefully we see some wee tweaks from the January game that we maybe create a few more chances than we did. But I think our setup will probably be fairly similar to that.
So, Manny, do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, every system gets figured out eventually. And I think what we've seen in January, I don't think we were very good in January, but it was overstated because we were looking to overstate how good we were because of how bad we'd been in the previous game, which I've said consistently is the worst performance I've ever seen from us against them ever. I think if you do take it to them, especially their fullbacks, we've mentioned this before, Barisic and Tavernier have been really, really important to how they play for the last, you know, 2-3 years. A lot of their outlets, I mean, Tavernier especially, what, how many goals has that guy got despite how many penalties it is? For a right back, it's absolutely frightening. Pushing the ball out to them too in terms of their attacking outlet, you can really nullify that if you push them back. In Europe, the reason that they do so well there is, as Aaron says, is they sit off players and they aim to hit them, hit them on the break. I think the way to beat them is to do that, is to push them back. The problem we've got, though, is nullifying what their outball is in those situations, and that's Morelos. Now, Morelos has not scored against us, right? And long may that continue. And there's a wee bit of a mockery about him. But for me, Morelos is really important to them when they play like that, because I don't think we are particularly able to cope with him in terms of his nuisance. And what will happen a lot of the time is if you push them back, then they'll try and change and they'll just start pinging balls over the top. He'll hold the ball up and he can bring midfielders in as they push forward. And we are shite at dealing with that. If we were better at dealing with that and we were able to press them back consistently, I think, you know, we would have a better chance. But that's the one worry for me that I've got. As much as he's not scored against us, he causes problems. He's not a great goal scorer. just his ability to kind of hold the ball and turn and bring other players is really, really important to how they play. You take him out of that team and it changes the way they play. And that's the problem for me. I mean, I'm sounding a bit like Aaron here. How long have I supported the Glasgow Rangers? How long have I supported Alfredo Morelos? But there's key things there. If we can handle him,
did you bake him that cake?
No, I seen that. It was a cracker. I'm not a baker, unfortunately. I think that's what we would need to do. I think we did that to some effect at Ibrox. We don't have Frimpong now. We've got Kenny. Whether he's able to do that, you would have to play Lax out and Kenny for me if you're going to do that. I would try and do that.
Well, you hold your horses a wee second, because we're going to run through the team. I'll tell you the team that that started that game. We'll see what differences or what changes we need to make. Callum, before we do that, do you agree? Do you think we you know, that was kind of the blueprint and we go with a diamond, or do you think we see him continue with 4-2-3-1 like Dundee United?
I think it'll have to be the diamond. I don't think we've got the natural width to play anything else right now. As we touched on, Forrest looked miles off it when we saw him the other week, and I know he's had 2 weeks, but even then I think it'd be a big risk throwing him in to a fixture that he's never even traditionally performed that well in anyway. So I think the diamond's the most logical, and then it's up to, you know, John Kennedy and how he makes the small tweaks within that system to try exploit Rangers' weaknesses, and they're definitely there. You know, they'll be coming off of a hard Europa League game, hopefully a Europa League defeat, and missing a couple of players as well. Their bench looks really, really thin just now. You know, it's obviously very frustrating to be coming to this point of the season where they've got a few injuries. Tavernier's out by the looks of it. Roof, I think he was just back from an injury. It's the kind of time in the season where you'd be wanting to play them if there was much to play for. That makes it all the more frustrating that there isn't. But I think it'll be a diamond, and I think it's a good time to play them. And it's really up to Kennedy and how he makes those small tweaks. I think that will be really important.
So if we start with the goalkeeper, Barca started the game in January. Obviously, I don't even know if he played after that. But Bain's been in goal now pretty consistently, consistently shite as well. Barkas has returned to the bench. We've just got to assume it's going to be Bain. Any changes on Bain?
No. Definitely Bain.
Lovely. Right, Kenny at right back, because we don't have any other right backs. Ayer and Welsh.
Yep.
You forgot Ralston. Roush chops,
man. Neymar's never been the same. Lax out at left back, Greg Taylor still out, I assume?
It doesn't matter, it has to be Lax out.
Yeah, it'll be Lax out. I don't know if Taylor's fit or not. Young boy Montgomery. I've seen people asking for him to get chopped in, which is absolutely hilarious.
Put him and Mikey Johnson up front.
How bad can it be? Right, so Sorrow started at the base of the diamond in January. That was something that we were all kind of desperate to see, and we got it. But he's not featured recently because of Scott Brown coming back into the team. Now, this, for me, gives me the fear. See Scott Brown being at the base of that diamond against them. I really don't want that. Does anybody think Brown's a viable option there?
You know what gives me, before I'll let you come in and talk about actually analysing whether he should or not. You know what gives me the fear? Him having a 15-minute spell and swaggering about like he did in the first half of the final against Hearts, and then looking like a dick like he did in the second half of the Hearts game. That's what gives me the fear. When Brown gets a wee sniff in that, and he's not capable of doing that for 90 minutes. So, don't start him, but we'll leave it at that.
It's one that I'm really torn. Sorry, on your way, Aaron.
I think I was disappointed with Sorrow in January. I think he got a lot of praise in that game, but I know some of the fouls he gave away were soft, but he was very ill-disciplined. And as much as I'm I'm still the lead reindeer of the Sorrow Sleigh, right? But we've done the analysis on him last month, and Alan sort of broke down, and Callum said tonight, I don't think he is good enough right now to be our number six consistently. I can't see him playing at the weekend. It will be Scott Brown. Scott Brown, we've seen a little bit more discipline come into his game again in the last couple of weeks. As much as I've said many times, I didn't want him playing between now and the end of the season. I think he'll play, and it probably might be the right decision. But Sorrow's a real tough one for me right now because, you know, I do love the guy, and I don't want to steal Aaron Slavin and say I would die for him, but I probably would. But there's so much work that needs to be done there. And I'm not sure that it's going to happen between now and the end of the season. I think he's maybe one that under a new manager might flourish, but he's not ready. And the January game, I felt myself being really frustrated by him at the time because, yes, some of them may not have been fouls, but he didn't show the discipline to stop diving into tackles, to stop doing that, just remained headless. And my worry would be that he does that again and all of a sudden, you know, 60 minutes, he's two yellows and a red. So I suppose you could say that could happen with Scott Brown. He might go and fling an elbow at somebody like we've seen in the past as well.
I think it probably speaks to how much of a problem position it is and how much it needs to be addressed in the summer. I mean, I was listening back to one of the old analyses the other day, and they touched on Sorrow at Ibrox. He completed 15 passes all game. 15. Season average, on average, it's been 58 all season. In that game, he completed 15 passes for your holding midfielder. Genuinely didn't believe it initially. I think Ibrox's his legs and his energy helped us win that battle, you know, win that midfield battle. And I think that's what a lot of us zeroed in on, that, you know, we did win that midfield battle, but we didn't then build on it. You know, that's always the first part of your game plan, you know, go out there and win the battle. You know, that's as the old cliche goes, but you then need to build on it and play your way into the game and, you know, try hurt teams. It's not good enough just, you know, competing and out-competing them. So for that reason, I'm probably swithering towards Brown, but because I do think over the past couple of games he's provided a bit of stability there. I don't think it was any coincidence that the final 10 minutes of the Dundee United game when he went off, our shape just completely went. And that's not because Scott Brown was having a fantastic game, but he knows how to occupy, he knows how to play that role and occupy certain spaces that allow you to, you know, build from the back. And I thought he was good, you know, against Aberdeen a few weeks back in terms of, you know, helping us play out and building the back. But, you know, I do really, really worry about, you know, they are very good in transition and breaking very, very quickly. And Scott Brown, as we've seen, you know, multiple times this season, and it's not even the best players in the league anymore. It's, you know, bang average Motherwell and Hamilton midfielders skipping by him. I really, really worry about Scott Brown in that midfield with them on the counter-attack.
Yeah, that's my big worry, is just simply his legs and his energy levels to kind of command that space. I mean, the other thing with Sorrow is, you know, we know he's got the energy. We know that he can, you know, he did have a bit about him. He was maybe too eager at times, I think, in January with a few tackles where, you know, he picked up a yellow card. But the other thing with Sorrow is he can play vertical passes, and he can do something going forward and play the ball forward in a way that Scott Brown will just not do now. I still think for the energy factor, even that alone, I still want Sorrow in the team. I just don't want Brown in that team. He's lost too many battles recently against their midfield, and I just don't see him winning another one with two games to go, possibly in his Celtic career. David Turnbull at 10, I think, is the only option, really. You know, there's no point in talking about the likes of Tom Rogic or anything like that. It's Turnbull's position, and that's it. Left and right, the two kind of eights, I suppose. McGregor and Christie had those spaces in January. McGregor's obviously going to occupy one of them. Christie, you can't really see Christie not in that team, can you?
No. In terms, if we're going with a diamond, I would, as long as we play, I'd play Turnbull at the tip of the diamond. I think anytime you move him elsewhere, you know, you get even less out of him, and he looks like a fish out of water. I would probably play McGregor on the left and Christie on the right, just, and I don't like Christie on the right, But I think in terms of the personnel, and if that's the shape we're going for, that's probably the best. His endeavour, his energy, you know, if he gets it right on the day, can be important. But you just don't know what you're going to get with Christie in terms of a disciplined performance. But we are where we are. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, this is why I'm finding it hard to get up for it, because we're talking about the same old deficiencies and the same old games and things like that. So the fact that we're talking about playing Ryan Christie on the right of a diamond depresses me, because if we play Ryan Christie on the right of a diamond next season, I'm going to be very fucking unhappy. But we are where we are. That's what I would do. McGregor on the left, Christie on the right.
Any kind of curveballs so far that anybody wants to throw in? I mean, I think there's no one else that could play that kind of role in midfield. We don't really have many options, and I think if you were going to do anything different, you'd just be changing the whole kind of formation. So I think we'll stick with Christie in there just now. Up front will be an interesting one. We started with Eddie and Griffiths in January. I don't know. I'm really at odds with the striking options that we've got just now, to be honest with you. I think there's just flaws in everybody, and there's kind of disappointment in everybody. Eddie, of course, is going to play. This is, you know, one of, you know, maybe 2-3 big games left, if you want to call this a big game. It's always a big game when you play them, I suppose. But Eddie will play. Hopefully we can get something out of him. Hopefully he, you know, does something magical, because that's what we rely on these days. Aaron, I'll start with you. Strikers, Union and all that. Ayeti, Griffiths or Klamala?
I think for me, Klamala probably. Ayeti looks miles off it. I spoke about him in the analysis last month, and I went in depth and tried to identify how we get the best out of him. But bottom line, he just doesn't look fit. He's not looked fit at all season. He looks to be miles away from getting, like, Dundee United gave me 15 minutes to go, panned to Ayeti sitting on the bench, not even warming up. Like, he's not even in the contention for coming on right now. It feels like he's miles away. So I would be shocked if he was anywhere near the starting lineup. He's obviously not in the thinking right now. He doesn't appear to be the type of guy who can keep himself sharp. It's maybe harsh having a go at his fitness. He's a professional athlete, so that's maybe harsh, but he doesn't appear to be the type of guy who keeps himself sharp, at least, or does stay sharp if he's not playing. So he's not going to play. Griffiths, again, he can't say anything that's not been said about Lee Griffiths already. Phenomenal talent on his day, but those days are few and far between now, very few and far between, and his days at Celtic are probably numbered. So I think it's got to be Klamala. And before the game in October, we spoke about it, myself and Stephen Russell and Christian done the team talk, and I'd said at that time Klamala would probably be a good option. And the reason for that is that, like we've said, they're going to sit in, that, you know, they're going to sit in and make it difficult for us. Similar to Kennedy's reason for using Klamala against Aberdeen, you know, he can stretch the game a wee bit. You look at guys like Goldson, Hellander, the two of them don't like when strikers are getting in behind them, or players are getting in behind them. So Klamala has the ability to do that. He's not the best football player. He's not a player that I particularly enjoy or like watching. I think there's so much that he lacks, but he's raw, he's energetic, he's going to be a pest. So if you have the right players around him, in terms of having Edward on his game, hopefully, and he owes us a performance in this game, he owes himself a performance in this game. I've avidly defended him consistently, Louis, as you know. Like, I'm always at defending him, but he owes us something, so it'd be nice if he turned up and gave us something. I think I would go him and Klamala, and Edward can cause them problems in that left. We've spoken about, obviously, Tavernier won't play, and they'll probably play the young boy Patterson. I've not seen enough of him to see what he's like, but that space between the right back and Goldson is where we've consistently caused them issues, and they always get issues. So Edward will occupy that, and hopefully we'll get joy from that. And I think Klamala can cause issues as well by stretching them and really trying to get him behind them.
Amari?
I would play Klamala as well. Actually, before Aaron said that, that's what was in my mind. And the main reason for that is exactly that. He can occupy their centre-halves. He can occupy their defenders. I don't think he's got a particularly, you know, I think it's fair to say he's raw. You know, I don't think there's anything he's particularly strong at just now, you know. But at the same time, I've not completely written the guy off like a lot of other fans have. that's what we probably need. I think we need to kind of get in their face a wee bit. Klamala is probably more capable of that than a Yeti, who just again looks as if he's still on the beach where he was pre-season before he signed for us. And Griffiths, for me, he's done at the club. I mean, I've consistently said, don't write Lee Griffiths off. I'm done with him. I just think that his time at the club should come to an end now, I would say. So for me, I would go with Klamala. I'm not saying that with any great joy, but I think that he may be able to offer us something that might help us in the day.
Cal?
Yeah, I think for Kennedy, it would be pretty much a straight choice between Klamala or El Yunusi. To be honest, I don't think El Yunusi's excelled in that role any time he's played in it. He's played in it a few times. I don't think he was particularly good against Dundee United the other week too, and he played against Livingston earlier in the season there. And he really struggles to affect the game because I think he's playing up top or off the striker. He wants to drift, and he drifts into the exact same pockets that Edward wants to drift into. So with Klamala, I think you can send him out with, you know, clear instruction to, you know, occupy that right channel, don't clog up the left-hand side, leave that. We've got enough talented players over in that space. Play on the shoulder of Hellander, because I don't think Hellander's, you know, particularly mobile. And we've seen a few times this season Klamala managing to get a bit of joy if, you know, a ball slid in down the channel between their, you know, their left back and their left centre back. And other than that, just essentially you want them to do what Morelos does for them, you know, run, you know, Harry, bully, all the wee snide things that, you know, you really need in a game of football. I was thinking about that when I was watching the Arsenal game at the weekend, and how Kieran Tierney, you know, goes down clutching his face anytime somebody even breathes on him, but the second, you know, he needs to tackle someone, he goes right through them. We really lack that, and, you know, we lack an element of snideness all across the park. I really want to see that on Sunday. I want to see his in their faces. I want to see his claim for everything. I want to see his surround the referee. If, you know, the first tackle Morelos does, I want to see his on top of the referee. If there's no fans in the stadium, make it known. And I think Klamala can be a key part of that. Send him out there and say, you're getting, you know, 60, 70 minutes, and I want you to chase absolutely every ball and not give them a moment's peace. And then after that, we can whip you off and you've got, you know, 20, 25 minutes to maybe bring on a Griffiths or a Moy when they're tiring. But I think Klamala, you want him to do a lot of the donkey work, and he's shown, you know, particularly I think about Lille at home this season, that if he's given a clear role, that he can do that. So yeah. I would be Klamala as well.
I'm going to go with Klamala as well. Partly some of the reasons you've already given, you know, Griffiths, he's done, and I don't want to see him play for Celtic again. Yeti has never really been interested much at all since he's arrived. And, you know, we said Eddie was raw at one point when he first kind of started, you know, when he first started playing for us, and when he was first started kind of taking over from Dembele, and we're saying Klamala's raw. I mean, Klamala's like raw chicken, and, you know, Eddie's like raw Wagyu beef. There's big differences there, but you hope that you can get something out of them. You know what I mean? Get the right ingredients, we can make something. I don't know where I'm going with the food analogies, but we're going to leave it there. Predictions, I'm going to be snide. I thought I'll let them off and no ask them for predictions, but I'm going to be an arsehole. So, Manny, give us a prediction.
I'll take 3 Rangers now.
Wow. Cal?
I think it'll be tight. I'll go 1-0 Celtic.
Aidan?
7-0 Celtic, Klamala double hat-trick.
Yes, that's like one of my predictions for the old days. I'm going to go 2-1 Celtic. Why not? Got to be optimistic. We're very quickly going to get to a question from Twitter before we finish up. Matthew Rooney's asked about, could Lee O'Connor, currently on loan at Tranmere, be a contender for the right-back position next season? I don't think any of us have really, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think any of us have really seen enough of him to kind of assess him. But I would like to maybe talk about that in a future podcast. There's a scout report coming out on him soon. I'm not quite sure who's covering it or whatever, but that is in the pipeline. Not Aaron's doing it, there we go. So we'll leave that one for just now, Matthew, but you can tune into that soon. The question we're going to get to, and I don't know, Callum, you've maybe not seen these because you're not here, and I'm not sure if they've got them in Germany because they'll probably get much better, Chris. But Matt McGeoch has said, is the Weekly getting in on the KFC crisp action? There's these, I don't know if you've seen them, but it's like Walkers.
I've heard rumours. I'm very excited about the idea of trying them. All you get over here in Germany, they only have one flavour of crisp, pretty much, which is paprika, and that's about it. So if anyone can send me it over, provided it gets through customs after Brexit, then I'll happily take a bag.
I'm
happy to do that because the idea of KFC flavoured crisps does fuck all for me, so I'll happily exchange some paprika crisps with you, Callum.
Sounds like a good deal.
I've tried them, right, and I thought they were shite, Matt. I'll be honest with you, I thought they were shite. And see the jalapeno and cheese ones you get, the same range, but the jalapeno and cheese, those are the shit. Those are up there. They're up there with Thai sweet chicken McCoy's. And I think they're the gold standard of a packet of crisps. If you're going into a shop to buy one bag of crisps, Thai sweet chicken is the greatest. Below that is these bad boys. Aaron, crisp, favourite crisp?
So I went vegan 7 weeks ago and I'm still going around the landscape trying to identify what crisps I can eat and can't eat. Turns out I checked in the shop earlier when you put this in, can't eat those KFC ones, so I've not got a comment on them. Huge fan of the Flaming Hot Watsits right now, though. Those are excellent.
My hands up to the point you were going to say Monster Munch, but I can't say I've dipped my toe in the Flaming Hot Watsit world, but they can't be up there with Monster Munch because they're Premier League.
You get spicy. I know we're going maybe a wee bit too long on this, Gal, I'm sorry, but you get spicy rings in Asda that are insane. They're the shit.
I'm not with them anymore, but they are incredible.
Are they not vegan?
How weird is this, right? Sorry, Gal, but I'll just go talk about it. Why have crisps got like milk powder and stuff in them?
Maybe it's what makes them taste nice. I don't know. But the KFC, I'm not on board. I'm not on the KFC canoe or whatever it is. Canoe's a sea, but you know what I'm saying. Okay, so that's us. That's us for this week. It's been a wee bit longer than usual. I thought just before we round up, we should probably say a congratulations to Boud, who's Cynic of the Week for the third week in a row. I think he's going for 10 in a row, but like Neil Lennon, he'll probably fucking fail at 9. But good luck to the man anyway. So Manny, it's been a pleasure. It's good to see you again.
Always a pleasure, Louis. We've enjoyed it tonight. Callum, Aaron have been excellent. We've really enjoyed it. So cheers.
Callum, great to have you.
Thanks a lot for having me. I've really enjoyed it.
Aaron, I'm looking forward to seeing how shite Clamala is at the weekend.
They'd probably be absolutely pish, but hey, let's get behind them.
Let's get rocking.
Absolutely. It's, I suppose, big game this week. We've got to be positive, go into it. Let's smash them. If we can't win, take legs. That's what I'm saying. Right. This has been the Cynic Weekly, and we'll speak to you down the road.